ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Wiggy, what's up to everybody out there? It is the Sneaks and Sats podcast, episode 55. I am EJ.
Which makes me Statty Daddy Julian over here.
Welcome back to us.
Yes,
and to everybody
back
out there.
Yes.
Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Follow us on our social media, Instagram, X, TikTok, and Threads. Special episode today, guys.
We got a great one. We are happy to welcome our first guest on the show, Seton Hall strength and conditioning coach, Angelo Gingerelli. Thank you for joining us, Angelo. We appreciate your time.
What's going on, guys? I'm excited to be here. Big fan. Listen to a lot of those 55 episodes, and excited to be on number 55, honestly.
Yeah, that works out well.
Special episode, number some of our favorite athletes that wore 55, Junior Seau. Just talked about the Dodgers, so Oral Hershiser.
Okay.
And some cool Seton Hall athletes that we looked up that played for you guys. One that's kind of special for me, Shaheen Holloway, who's also the coach, I believe.
Yeah, he's right upstairs right now as we record this.
Oh, wow. Maybe he heard us. And also Sam Dalembert.
Yeah, great run with us right before I got here. Decent run in the NBA, too, probably 10, 12-year career. I think a lot of them went to Sixers.
Yeah.
Had a good pro career, too.
Awesome double-double guy.
Didn't he have a crazy, like, full-court shot with the Rockets? I think he did.
I do remember his time with the Rockets.
Yeah.
Yeah. And last one, Mr. Eddie Griffin.
Eddie Griffin, that's a good one.
Yes.
Yeah, awesome. Right. I think him and Dalembert were, like, with the same couple years, you know what I mean? And then and all that was right before I got here. But they were some good early 2000 teams, no doubt.
Yeah, awesome.
Well, that's kind of a good segue, I guess, just to get into a little bit of your background, Angelo. I know you've been at Seton Hall for just about 20 years, a little over. So, and I know before we were kind of looking through your profile on the university website, it says that you were with the Pittsburgh Pirates for a year or so. And I know EJ was like curious about kind of how the strength and conditioning at the professional level might change from the, from that to the collegiate level.
Yeah.
Nice, man. So you guys, I see you got a Dodgers hat on. We talked about baseball right before we hit record. So if you really love baseball, working in pro baseball is like, you know, you like Disney Channel and you work at Disneyland or Disney World every day, right? If you're not super focused and like a massive baseball fan, I love baseball, but I like the college setting a little better because I might be on campus 10, 12 hours a day, but every hour I'm doing something different. Right. When you're in that baseball world, you're only with the same basically 25 to 40 guys day after day after day. And that minor league schedule, like I was in the minors with the Pirates, and it wasn't bad by any means. It was a great job. I liked the organization. But it's, you know, every day, Monday through Saturday, is exactly the same. And then Sunday is exactly the same, but during 4 hours earlier because you play a day game. And it's just that grind for, you know, 150, 160 days in a row. Depending what level you're working at or playing at. So I wouldn't say it's not a bad way to make a living at all, but you got to really love baseball and be committed to being with that group of people day in, day out, very long bus trips, away, you know, be away for 2-3 weeks at a time in minor league baseball. And I wish any listeners out there interested in that, you know, shoot me an email, hit me on social media, I'll tell you more about it. But if you think you want to work in pro sports, I always tell people, do it when you're younger. Because when you go, you know, you have crazy away trips, the playoffs can take you away from your family 8, 10, 12 months a year. Do it before you have kids and a wife and a house you got to take care of. Because it's a cool lifestyle. It's a cool career. But it's just really hard if you want to do anything outside of that career. Because it's definitely not a 9-to-5.
Oh, definitely.
That makes sense.
Just to kind of piggyback off that, did you find yourself also, you're also obviously the strength and conditioning coach for those guys in the minor leagues. Did you find yourself kind of, because it's tough in baseball, I would say, and out of all the major sports to make it to the big leagues, you know, when you're AA, AAA, do you find yourself kind of being the motivational speaker for them too as you're
sometimes you really have to be, man, because like you said, most other sports, if you're not a real deep minor league system, well, I know you guys are big NBA fans. If you're on a G League team, you're just one step away from the NBA team.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. Up in a second.
If you're in single A, you're three levels away from the big show. You know what I mean? And it might take 5 years for you to do it. So it's a little bit different motivation because, you know, if you get drafted to play Major League Baseball, you're obviously incredibly talented. You're one of the best players in the country as a college or high school kid.
Yeah.
But you still might be 5 years away from playing in front of, you know, tens of thousands of people and making real money, if we're going to be honest. So, yeah, there's a little bit of how do you stay focused for this many games over this many years, knowing that it's a multi-year process. It's not, you know, if you're in a G League, if one guy tweaks a hamstring, you're on the team the next day.
Yep.
Yeah.
The lower levels of baseball, there's got to be a lot of events falling in place for you to make it to that major league level.
Yeah, so awesome, man.
Such a crazy system. Very cool, though. And then also, I know you've got your book coming out soon, The Next 4 Years, Compete, Win, and Thrive in College Sports. And I think that kind of ties in with what EJ said about, you know, and what you were talking about, how you have to move up through the system. And so I know, you know, reading what you sent us, it sounds like this is really going to be focused on transitioning high school kids to the next level, which is going to be college. And I was curious to, you know, get your thoughts on how that's going to look, especially with the new money in high school and college sports. I know we talked a little bit yesterday or on Tuesday about, you know, you're doing Reeboktober, but Reebok just signed, according to Bleacher Report, they just signed their first NIL deal for men's basketball with a high school guy, five-star recruit Nate Ament. And so he's going to get all those cool Reebok shoes. But I wonder, you know, if he had access to your book, what kind of things should he be looking for as he transitions as like this high profile guy into the next level?
I appreciate that. And anybody, when we're talking about $1 million NIL deals, we're talking about the top 25 players in the country, McDonald's All-American, best player in the state, right? And even for the, we'll keep using the word men, we'll talk about men's basketball for a second.
Yeah, sure.
People have talked pertaining to women's basketball and a bunch of other sports as well. But to use the basketball example you guys gave, even if you're that, you're the best basketball player in your state, you're being recruited by everybody, everybody's making, you know, throwing deals at you. The transition's a big jump, right? Because you were the best player playing with boys, and now you're going to play with men, right? Yeah, and the NIL transfer portal era, it used to be men 18 to 22. Now, with the transfer portal, academic rules shifting, redshirt rules changing, and kids getting an extra COVID year the last couple of years, you're playing with 23 to 25-year-old men, and you're a 17 or 18-year-old boy.
Yep.
That is a massive difference, right?
Yeah.
The other thing that's different, the joke I always make is, you know, the day before you go to college, you lived your whole life in a house with your family. Now you're going to move into a room with some kid you just met. And that's the beginning of the changes, right? The dining hall food is different. The supplements are different. The gear you're wearing might be different. You might have never done anything physical in your life before, after high school was over, like 3 p.m. Now we're lifting weights at 6 a.m. 3 to 4 days a week, right?
Yep.
Crazy conditioning test. And if you care about academics, because we're going to go, not all student athletes do, but if you care about academics, every class you take in college is presumably going to be harder than any class you took in high school.
Right.
So I think the stresses that come out, and on top of that, you come from a good family background with mom and dad in the house, or mom or dad, and they're on top of you about doing your homework, going to bed early, eating a decent dinner.
Yeah.
They're out of the picture, right? So now all of a sudden, you went from having maybe some good balanced meals and mom or dad making your lunch and dinner to access to a dining hall with unlimited bad choices, right? And nobody telling you when to go to sleep, nobody telling you to put your phone down and get some rest or do your homework. And it's just such a different world. And I think one thing with on the recruiting thing, I always say, college coaches are not liars. They are salespeople. What I mean by that is, when you're being recruited to go somewhere, we're going to show you all the best stuff. And that's true a lot of the time, right? But then there's also some stuff that's not that great. And the one thing we're never telling anybody is, you're a good player now, but if you're going to be a great player, you got to do A, B, and C to get there, right?
Right.
And what I've seen over my 20 years in the game is that everybody shows up unprepared. They just don't know what they're getting into. And part of it's on them. They're not doing the research or what it takes to play at the next level.
Yeah.
And part of it's on the system that if we're recruiting somebody, we're not telling them what it takes to get them. We want to tell them they're great now. So that kind of did get me in the book. I feel like I do a good job of helping our kids make the transition. And I just wanted to help more people and get that information out there. Because I feel like the way they kind of brought up the NIL deal from Reebok already, other shoe companies are doing that. We took an already pretty hectic time in a kid's life as being recruited to place
sports
college.
Right. Yeah.
And now we've thrown in tons of money, tons of endorsement deals, the idea you can transfer whenever you want. And I think a lot of these things are positive for the players, and they're really good things for young people to make a lot of money at that. In my opinion, they're owed. If you could fill up a 20,000-seat arena, you should definitely get a check for that, right?
Right, yeah.
But at the same point, can we kind of help them as older people and mentor them and let them make the best decisions for them? You know what I mean? I think we're in a weird situation where people my age are screaming, all these kids are only in it for the money, we're ruining college sports. Well, that's your opinion. That's fine. But the system is the way it is. So let's make it where people can be successful in order to get into and make the best decisions they possibly can. And make, in my opinion, if you have the chance to do it, make as much money as you possibly can. Because one thing we know about sports and athletics is that can end in a second. You're always one bad turn, one bad cut, one bad hamstring injury away from never seeing that money again in your career.
Yeah.
So if you do it when you're 18 or 20, you may as well do it because it might not be there when you're 28 or 29.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, it's a kind of a wild time, like you were saying. It's just the amount of money. I can't imagine having people trying to sign me and give me money at, 17, 18. It's just
pressure, right?
One thing I've said, I think I look at this a little differently than most people in my kind of age bracket, experience sure. bracket in the profession.
Yeah.
From the 1950s to 2020, the system was so skewed to give the coaches and the administrators and the schools all of the power, and the players that people pay to come and see, none of the power.
Yeah.
Now it's swung the other way. Now it may have swung too much and this might not work long term, but if you're lucky enough to be in the right age group now, you can make life-changing money in some cases, right?
Yeah.
But pre-NIL deal, mid-2000s, I remember I was driving around North Jersey and New York City, and we had a really good men's basketball team for a couple of years. We had a group of guys that played together for 4 years, went deep in the tournament, and the three main guys were everywhere. They were on billboards. They were on the sides of buses. We pumped them out as much as we could, right? And every time I drive up to one of the buses or see one of the billboards in my car, I always had two thoughts. Number one, how are they not getting paid for this? Because that's insanity, right?
Yeah.
But number two, who is photoshopping these pictures? Because these guys are not that handsome in real life. But that's what I always, the argument I make, these guys are too young to get paid. Well, if Justin Bieber sells out the Garden, he gets a check, right?
Yeah,
why should someone else not get a similar check for selling the same amount of seats for the same ticket price? So that's kind of right. That's the way I personally look at it. You can debate that all day, but the purpose of the book is to prepare people for what they're getting into. And it's not only a football and basketball book; it covers all the sports to some extent. Because even if you play volleyball, if you play track and field, if you play field hockey, that transition is huge for you too.
Yeah.
And there's really not a lot of resources out there of how to navigate it and make it work and show up on campus ready. The other thing I think we're dealing with college sports a ton now, we should have dealt with this a long time ago, is the mental health psychology side of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we're finding that so many athletes are struggling mentally and internally, not just physically. My argument is you should exhaust every resource towards you. Go and see whatever kind of counselor, guidance, mentor you need. Definitely do that. But if you take care of the physical side and you show up on campus physically ready, that's one less thing on your to-do list, right?
Right.
That's one less thing to have anxiety
Love
about. And you check that box, and now you can worry about learning the playbook or adapting to your class schedule or whatever it is. But obviously, if you take the 100 days from when you sign your NLI, your spring or senior year, to your first day on campus, as 100 days, Give me 1 hour a day. So 100 hours over 100 days, and you'll be in good enough shape to compete and do the best you can that first semester. I think that's really the kind of way you got to look at it. I always say people look at signing that national letter of intent like a finish line. In reality, it's a starting line, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a great finish line. You should post that on YouTube and Instagram as many hits and likes as you possibly can. If you're of age, pop bottles. If not, stay away from the bottles. But celebrate and have a party. And then, move on to get ready to be successful in the next step. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I just wanted to give personally the listeners just a little bit. You've been a strength and conditioning coach and been doing this for about 20 years now. You've seen plenty of kids, plenty of athletes. Piggybacking on what we were just talking about, it can be kind of overwhelming with just the physical aspect of it, but the mental aspect. In the last 20 years, what are some of the differences that you've seen with the athletes and the kids that's changed over the years?
Okay, I think the biggest thing is I got into this profession right before social media, right?
Right before
it was widespread. So the idea of you being a good baseball player, let's say where you guys are out on the West Coast, and having any idea what's going on in baseball across the rest of the country was almost impossible, right?
Yeah.
You didn't know where you stood. It was impossible to know how you measured it all. And now there's so many websites, so many draft boards, so many talent evaluation websites out there. Plus, you just follow other players' social media. The idea of where you stand on a national level is common knowledge to like literally seventh and eighth graders, right? And very common knowledge to junior and senior in high school, where that was just not a thing. If you were like the best player in your county, you thought you were going to be the next Shohei Ohtani. Like you thought that was the only scenario for you. But in reality, every county's got a kid as good as you. So you kind of know that a little bit better now, which is a different, better thing, right? There's a dark side to social media too. At some point, how much you on your phone, how much you placing your self-worth on likes and comments and stuff like that. So that's not great. But and the other thing I think we've seen in the last, like, I'd say the last 20 years, last 10 on the athletic side of thing, the wearable technology, right? So your Apple Watches, your GPS systems, you're knowing your heart rate all the time, your Whoop straps. That's information you would have to go spend tens of thousands of dollars in a lab to get when I was in high school. And now literally every recreational athlete knows that about themselves, right?
Yeah.
So I think if you're using that to your advantage and using that to make the right decisions, you should theoretically really maximize your potential in a way that wasn't possible before those things were out there.
Awesome.
I was curious too, just, you know, I don't want to give all the secrets of your book away, but just from your perspective, from like a physical, I'm just not strong enough standpoint, what seems to be the biggest struggle for an incoming freshman in the weight room or just in any kind of athletic situation that you've seen where this is something they should be focusing on maybe a little earlier?
I'm gonna give you two. All right, and it's kind of the both of them are in my job title, right? The first thing is overall strength. We live in a system where kids that were good at sports get picked out of gym class, get picked out of other sports, and they just do that one thing from when they're about 12 until they're done playing, right?
Yep.
So we do all, you see, you know, freshman college pitchers in baseball and softball that can throw a baseball or softball incredibly hard, right? Mm-hmm. But they literally can't do a lunge, can't do a push-up, can't do a pull-up. You see swimmers that can swim 100 yards literally faster than you can imagine, but they can't do a body weight squat, right? Yep. So what I always tell people is if you can start at a young age and get really good at just the basic movement patterns, stuff we used to do back in the day in phys ed and forgotten about, you'll be just create a better foundation for movement and probably see less injuries over a career than in kids that don't ever do that stuff, right? I feel like a lot of young kids, we want to get to steps 3 and 4, and we never do steps 1 and 2, right? So the joke I always make is we have so many personal trainers out there, strength coaches. We want to get a high school kid and put him on a physio ball and do single-arm dumbbell presses, and the kid can't do a regular push-up. Now, there's a place for that advanced movement, right? But it's after you could do a regular push-up, a regular bench press, a regular dumbbell press. Then maybe you start getting out the physio ball or the single-arm stuff or stuff like that, right? Yeah. The other thing, the conditioning component, I always say, if you're going into college, or really any next level you're going to jump to, if you got to pick between strength work and conditioning, I always tell people, be in shape, and here's why. If you show up to the first workout in the weight room and you don't know what everything is and you don't know how to do this lift or whatever, the coaches are there to help you through that, right? Mm-hmm. If you always show up to the first running day or the first practice and you're always the last person in every drill and you're throwing up halfway through the practice and then you pull your hamstring because you're out of shape, you put a bullseye on your back immediately as someone that's going to do that to get ready. So I think that, you know, you get hide a little bit in the weight room. Conditioning wise, you got to really be there, right? You got to do that and put the work in. So I say, ideally do both that summer. If you got to pick one, pick conditioning, because that's going to put you in a better position on the team depth chart and what the coaches think of you than being a house and a, you know, real strong guy in the weight room, but strong in every conditioning drill. The other joke I make is tied to your show for a little bit. Whenever I deal with somebody coming back from the summer, starting in the Seton Hall, and they told me they didn't work out in the summer because they couldn't afford a gym membership, and then they got out brand new sneakers.
I mean, come on, man. You understand.
For the price of literally one general release Nike and Foot Locker, you could have joined a gym for 3 months.
Set
some priorities. I got way more sneakers than I should have in my lifetime. I agree with that.
Guilty.
But also, I have a gym membership. Like, I put some money into some things that I think are important for my long-term health. Then I take my fun money and buy whatever the sneaker of the month is or something like that.
Priorities is what we're saying. Is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, man.
I kind of wanted to switch gears a little bit. You have a amazing academic list of academic accomplishments. You've gone to University of Delaware, Virginia Tech, and obviously Seton Hall University. We listened to a podcast and heard that your first jersey when you were young was a Seton Hall jersey. What is the truth behind that? And was that kind of like a foreshadowing to your job later on?
Yeah, man. It's actually kind of a wild thing. The first jersey I got was a Terry DeHaire Clipper jersey. He got drafted when I was a teenager. And you know what's weird, man? To get your hands on that jersey, like, there was no Fanatics back then.
Right? Yeah, how did you do that?
Such a local hero, I had it. And it was weird, man. When I got this job, that exact jersey is hanging up in our men's basketball locker room.
Oh, wow.
I got to meet him a bunch of times. He's a super nice guy. And then right after I had a Seton Hall pullover starter jacket, which I still have in my closet.
Awesome.
I keep it for special occasion. But yeah, man, I always say, like, if you get a chance to be a part of something that you grew up as a fan of, it's really special. And I sometimes, you know, I'm up early in the morning, I'm here for hours on end, I work a lot, but sometimes when I lose focus, I'm like, oh wait, you were watching this on TV when you were in high school, and now you're here with the guys and being a part of the program. So sometimes you got to pull back and be like, oh man, I am really lucky to be able to be here. Yeah. But that, the Clippers Derrick Hare jersey and a Seton Hall pullover starter jacket, two of my first pieces of sportswear that I've ever had.
Yeah, I mean, Julian and I love playing this game where we name kind of like a more obscure, random basketball players, you know what I mean? And we have not said Terry DeHare.
No, we have not.
That's a good one.
No,
I mean, he was on the Clippers when they were just, like, so bad. Like, they were winning, like, literally 12 games a year. Like, 12 and 60 a couple times, I think. And then he got better by 10 years later. But I guess where you guys live, there's such an also-ran to the Lakers. But they were even, like, further lower on the depth chart back then.
Oh, yeah.
Back then, it was like, I mean, who was their best player? Like Danny Manning?
It was
rough times, unfortunately.
I can't even really think of anyone else who was on there.
Ron Harper was there for a moment.
Was it Mookie Blaylock there for a bit?
That was, I think, probably a little later.
Maybe.
But,
You know what Clippers team I always liked, but I don't think they really, like, they didn't accomplish what they probably could have? That early 2000s, Darius Miles era.
Yes. The best.
That was fun, man. That was a good time. They went to playoffs maybe, but not super deep. But right. I thought that was – you know what? And I think, too, that's an example from what we talked about before about kind of young – they drafted a lot of kids right out of high school during that era, right?
Yeah.
And when you do that as a franchise, it's a question mark. Some of them pan out. Some of them don't. And that they had so much potential on that team that just didn't ever get over the hump of, like, Western Conference Finals or whatever, if I remember correctly.
I mean, and during the early 2000s, that team, if you place them in another era, maybe they're a little more successful. But you had the Kobe Shaq Lakers, you had the Spurs and
the Suns.
The Suns.
The Western Conference has been a bloodbath for like 25 years.
Right.
So.
The Knicks and Heat had that rivalry, you know. Yeah. So. Kind of tough to get through.
The Nets went to the playoffs twice in that era too, and then went to the finals twice.
Yeah, right.
The Spurs. But that's when you were in New Jersey before Brooklyn. Also, real quick, I'm going to recommend somebody else's book since you guys are such NBA fans, and we talked about Darius Miles and the Western Conference.
Okay.
Have you guys heard of the book Jailblazers?
No.
It's about the Portland Trail Blazers from, let's say, like 98 to 2005.
Yeah.
When it was like Rasheed Wallace, Darius Miles got traded there later.
Zach Randolph.
It's a wild book because I kind of forgot about how nuts that those teams were. But it's worth, if you like basketball, it's worth reading because it's just
a
crazy time in the NBA.
Definitely have to add
great
that.
Recommendation.
That team was mean.
I like them. I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge.
That list of players. He wasn't a jailblazer.
he was like one of the good guys, right? He was like one of the voices of reason in the locker room, I think. Right?
Yeah, that's true.
No, he was nice. LaMarcus Aldridge seems like a great guy. I mean, yeah. He seems very nice.
That was like the era of Rasheed Wallace getting like four texts a week.
Oh, yeah.
Wearing Air Force Ones. Right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Exactly.
The high tops of the strap, too.
It was wild. Like, he would show up. They're basically Timberland boots. Like, right? I can't do any physical activity in Air Forces, and he was playing 82 NBA games a year, and being good, if he wasn't getting thrown out of the game, he was a great player.
Also had his own, one of the first players that had his own, kind of his own logo on the Air Force One, too. Kind of had like a dunking logo.
Yeah, he was early on that.
Or his shot, sorry.
Yo, his
remember his really form where it's like kind of up here?
Shot, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, no, I remember the silhouette, and I think you could see he had baggy shorts on in the silhouette.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Part of the logo design.
That's
right?
Part exactly. of the look. Transitioning kind of more to the shoe side, because as you mentioned, as we talked about, you've got a sneaker collection. You're a sneakerhead. As someone who's relatively new into this game, I'm just curious. You know, we talked about it briefly. How, you know, back when you were competing in weightlifting and stuff like that, that there was really only one shoe. And now you have shoes tailored to just weightlifting or maybe just boxing,
right,
or, you know, obviously basketball shoes, stuff like that. Is that something that would you ever recommend, or do you think that the technology in the different shoes does make that much of a difference per sport?
Here's what I would say. I think the more elite you are at an activity, the more important the sneaker you wear, right?
Right.
So if you're a world-class weightlifter, having the best weightlifting shoe versus, say, the fifth best weightlifting shoe makes a difference, right?
Okay. In my opinion. Yeah.
If you're a 16-year-old novice weightlifter on the platform, probably buy the cheapest ones out there, see if you like it, get good at it, and work your way up from there, right?
Yeah.
And it goes across the board for a lot of sports. But I would say buy what you like, and then as you get better and you become more elite and you're physically noticing the differences in this shoe versus that shoe, then work your way up the price ladder and buy more elite shoes as you go up, right?
That's good advice.
Like but that. Yeah, I'm a parent of a 9-year-old little girl, and she's a good softball player. She's pretty good at the softball we play, right? But for me to go out and buy the $100 cleats every time she grows out of them, which is like 3 times a year, that just doesn't make any sense to me, right?
No, yeah.
Let's start at the lower level, let her get good, and then save that money, because when she gets older, then I'm going to have to buy the higher end expensive cleat, whatever it is at the time. You know what I mean? So I think start on the lower end and work your way up. And to be realistic, it doesn't matter. I would say don't wear basketball shoes to run a marathon. That's silly.
Of course.
You also
maybe
don't run your first marathon in the newest ASICS gel Kayano that's $160, and you're going to wreck it the first, you know, you're going to make it look at least dirty the first time you wear it anyway.
Yeah.
Right. What started the whole sneaker thing for you? What was the shoe? What is, do you remember the first?
Yeah, oh yeah, man, I remember when I was in my preteen, the Reebok Punk came out, but they only made it in men's sizes, right?
Yes.
So I couldn't get them, and then the next year they came out in the Twilight Zone Pump, which is Dominique Wilkins designed commercial, and they made that in kid size. And here, I think the men's size made them like $170, like a crazy price point.
Oh my lord!
And then the kids ones were like $100. And for my 13th birthday, my parents got me those. Those are my school shoes for the year.
Right.
And then I was just hooked. Like every season, I would know what shoes were coming out. I would watch NBA games just for the shoes.
And that's kind of
the way it came from then. And then I got into Jordans like everybody else. And then when I was in high school, the Air Max 95 dropped, which it's still looking from the future now. Like I just love. So I was a senior in high school that same month. Air Max 95 comes out and Jordan 11s comes out. They're great weeks apart from each other, right?
What a time.
And it was such a great time. And boy, it was a good time to be alive. It was a bad time because I had no money, so I couldn't buy them all when they came out, right? We're like, oh man, they're still to this day, almost 30 years later, probably two of my top five shoes ever. And the Air Max 95 is how I connected with you guys on the Air Max episode you guys did back in March. And because at that time, I was posting and getting my book cover designed, which I'll throw it up here for the YouTube.
Yes,
but it's designed after Neon Volt Air Max 95. Right.
Yeah.
So I took the color gradient, went from white to gray to black, so just sick. Like the shoe does. And I used that Nike Neon Volt cover on the color on the cover. I don't know why that tripped me up so much just now. But yeah, and then if this goes well and we drop a volume 2 in 2 years, I got this already designed in infrared. So everything that's neon is going to be infrared. And we're going to put that out, second edition in 2026, hopefully. Sneakers have been a huge part of my life, and I got a chance to design something from scratch. I've done other books, but this is my first book with complete creative control.
Okay.
And I was like, all right, let's base it on one of my favorite things ever, which is that neon Air Max 95.
So awesome.
And just for you guys listening out there, this comes out November 1st, correct?
Yeah, the book will be out November 1st, and then just kind of everything kind of come out after that. But yeah, November 1st, 2024.
Nice.
I have to ask you, you do have a family. Is the family involved in this? Has your sneaker knowledge kind of gone down to them, and do they have a liking towards it?
My wife is into footwear, I'll say that, right? But she's not like, oh man, I need these new Travis Scotts that are coming out.
You know what I mean? Right.
She wears cool sneakers for the most part, right? But she got any more of the grown woman side of things, the way she likes to dress, obviously, right?
Yes.
And my daughter she oscillates back and forth, right? I'll tell you guys a real quick funny story that if you guys have kids, you'll go through something like this.
Yeah.
So when she was a baby, I just bought her the coolest sneakers that I liked, right? Like,
of course.
I buy her soft bottom Jordan 14s. I buy her stuff at Air Forces, whatever. And then when she was 4 or 5 years old, she needed school shoes. And it was the time before that, the Bred Force came out, right?
Oh,
and
wow.
They sold out, obviously, across the board.
Yeah.
But we're in a kid's Foot Locker. And they had her size on the wall, like a couple days. Oh. Goes, oh, this is fire.
Well.
She's like, we got to get these. And she's like, no, I want Skechers. Like, what? You want Skechers? We don't wear Skechers. She's like, if you buy me those, I'm not going to wear them. And I'm like, okay, again, I'm not going to waste my money.
No.
So we went to the other side of the mall and got her some Skechers, which she wore, wore them out and got dirty or else. But then this summer, she redeemed herself, man. Her 9th birthday, she's like, Dad, I want a pair of white on white Air Forces. So I got to the White Hart, and in her birthday card, I wrote, you know, June, these are sneakers you asked for. If you go in a club and these get scuffed, the person that scuffed them goes home in an ambulance. You go home in a cop car. There's no other way.
That's the only way.
I think we have the similar. Yeah, yeah.
What's that?
We have a similar mindset when it comes to our shoes, man.
Yeah. Where you guys are on the West Coast, I haven't been out that way in a while. Is young women wearing filthy Air Force Ones a thing?
Oh, it is. It's that, and now it's become
the pandas.
It's become the panda dunk, and I don't know if that's
like
gone to the East Coast.
It's like 18-year-olds are getting issued them when on their 18th birthday or something, man.
Yeah.
Is the panda dunk wave over? What do you guys think?
I don't think so, because I at my job specifically, I'll see maybe over 10 pairs every day.
Yeah.
And then the Air Force One, the dirty Air Force One, is something you see all the time too. I would say those two, the West Coast and the LA specifically is a very big running shoe loving community, like place.
Makes sense.
Right. And so in the East Coast, specifically New York, you hear, you know, the Timberlands, right?
Yeah.
What's the big shoe over there right now that you kind of see a lot of the kids or a lot of people wearing out there?
Definitely still Panda Dunks. I feel like it might be.
Wow.
I think it might be kind of pulling back a little bit. They might kind of be falling off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
The other one is young women and young guys wearing like 2K running shoes from the early 2000s.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, Asics Gel Kayano 14s.
Oh yeah.
Like, kind of the older retro ones. A lot of silver and white colorways are popular, which I think is from a performance perspective, probably one of the best kind of shoes to walk around in all day.
Oh yeah.
Sure. As we all know, we love basketball shoes, but not super comfortable for just, you know, walking around and living a regular life on a basketball court. Those running shoes, probably orthopedically some of the best ones you can walk around in, right?
Oh, definitely.
And then any the ON company, those, and Hoka has really taken off here, man. It's just everybody's wearing those kind of high-end running shoes, whether they run or not. It's almost like what basketball shoes were earlier, or what skate shoes were in the dunk era.
Yep.
Like people that you just look at them and be like, I can tell you're not a runner. Those are fire running shoes.
Yeah.
But the running shoe thing is really taking off. And it's getting a little bit colder here now. So the Timberland will take over for the guys and some of the girls. And then I always say, when it gets winter time for me, I try to break out some foam posits. Because as a father, they are indestructible sneakers. Your kid just spill on them, throw up on them, step on them a million times. You just wipe up the plastic and they're clean again. So those are some of my favorite winter ones.
I mean, I love me a good foam posit, man. You know, they're trying to bring them back. I believe there a couple pairs are coming out in 2025.
I think they're doing one soon. It's like a collab with the video game Tekken, I think.
Oh, that's right.
I did see that. That does look. Yeah. I don't know much about Tekken, but the design looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know much either, but they do look really nice.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the collab Asics did with Marvel about a month or two ago?
I was able to get a pair. I got the Magneto, the 1130s.
Nice.
And it came with the comic and all that. And my first real pair of Asics in, like, I wouldn't say maybe 10 years. One of the light. I mean, I can barely feel it in my hand. You know what I mean?
Nice. Yeah, they're a good shoe. I haven't seen them in person yet, but I remember when I saw the announcement, I was like, it's weird because Asics right now is kind of popping with young, cool people who are probably not comic book fans.
No, probably not. Yeah, but that was a very cool collab.
Right.
What are the big sneakers on the West Coast right now? What are you guys doing now out there?
What's huge right now is the running shoe. So
yeah, it's pretty similar. The Hokas, I feel like, Solomon, are kind of just like anyone, regardless of if they're a sneakerhead or not, kind of is having Hokas right now. Like, I see those everywhere.
Hoka on Solomon, you see a lot now too.
Yeah, like a camping type shoe.
Yes, and going for that look. You know?
Yeah.
I feel like that's what LA is kind of transitioning to, is aside from the fact that we like the running shoe, a lot of people are kind of going for that hiking look, a little more loose fitting clothes. And what looks good with that is like the sleek running shoe. I think that's what everyone's going for. So
it's funny because I work on the west side of LA, which I feel like in general is a little more like posh and kind of upcoming. And I see a ton of dunks, but no pandas usually.
Yeah.
But it's pretty much everyone at my job is wearing dunks right now, which is a little odd, but you know.
Which I think it kind of makes sense, man, for a work shoe, right? If you got to wear like business casual type clothes,
yeah.
There's so many colorways of dunks that you can match, you know, you can match them with a polo, match them with a sweater, match them with a blazer. Yeah. There's some ways you can do that business casual. That kind of makes sense to me. I was at a street fair at the Jersey Shore over the weekend, and there was a vendor that had probably like 300 pairs of fake Yeezys, right?
Oh my God.
Fake Yeezys? I was never a Yeezy fan, but I was like, this poor guy bought all these bootleg shoes, and now you can't even say Kanye's name, let alone movie sneakers.
I do feel like the Yeezy wave, my cousins, I have cousins who are in high school right now, and they, like, 4 years ago were, like, all about Yeezys. Yeah. Like, every shoe they had was probably, it was usually a knockoff, and they were cool with that, but yeah. It was some kind of Yeezy. And now, I mean, maybe it's what happened with Kanye, maybe it's just trends, well, but they're gone.
What I see too with the college kids I deal with, they the same thing. Like, 5-6 years ago, they were the only shoe you would see. Like, it was a...
Yep.
But think about this, man. If you're in college right now, or definitely high school, Kanye hasn't been culturally or musically relevant in almost your whole life.
That's right? True. Yeah.
If you're 18 right now, the last time Kanye had music that we all liked and all played on the radio and in clubs, you were in like second grade.
Oh yeah.
So at some point, that would be like me wanting to buy like, I don't know, like Guns N' Roses sneakers when I was in college. That was so far before my time.
Yeah.
It wouldn't resonate with me. And then that's weird too, because like you see this passage of time. Jordan, I think, is the only guy that way post playing career, 25 years post playing, name still rings bells, right?
Oh, big time.
Everyone else is kind of when you're playing or when you're culturally relevant, and then the youth move on to the next thing that speaks to them. Which makes sense to me because that's what I did when I was that age. You did it when you were that age, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting you bring that up, too, because just, I think, yesterday, Adidas announced that they're going to be re-releasing the Jabbar shoe, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's signature shoe from the 70s. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of curious as to, like, just how you said, you know, like, obviously he's one of the all-time greats in the NBA, but I don't really know how well that will play just with, you know, casual sneakerheads or kids that want to look cool. It's like... Yeah. You just don't know.
Like, can you be nostalgic for something you didn't live through, right?
Right.
I don't remember Kareem Abdul-Jabbar as a player at all. Yeah, I think he played when I was actually alive, but I was like a little kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So it's like I have no connection to that whatsoever, but I do, if they retro a shoe that came out in the 90s or 2000s, I'm at least interested because I remember Allen Iverson. I remember Michael Jordan. I remember Kevin Garnett.
Yeah.
That Moses Malone, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, that era I just didn't experience the way both of these kids did.
No, it's very interesting with kind of some of the retros I feel like they're doing. Yeah. They really seem to be going like way back. Converse recently did the Converse All-Star, which was like Larry Bird and Magic Johnson's signature shoe. So
yeah,
they're kind of, seems like some of the companies are going reaching like way deep into their pocket right now.
Yeah.
So. What do you guys think about that? That with Nike and Adidas releasing way back shoes and now some kind of holy grails too, like the Wu-Tang Dunks and the ones you can never get. And now they're going to be like in Foot Locker pretty much. Is that a good thing or a bad thing for the game?
Yeah. You know, I think as a guy, I think me and you kind of were from that same generation of sneakerheads, right? So where all these big shoes dropped. I think for some of us that don't have these pairs, it's a good opportunity for us to get them. But I also see it as an act of desperation a little bit from Nike with all these big running shoes coming up and kind of taking over the market, the shoe market now, especially in Los Angeles, like I've said, it's all I see. There is an oversaturation of Dunks, I think, coming out in the last, since maybe even since COVID. I'm kind of in the middle on it. I mean, I don't know how you feel, like with the Wu-Tang Dunks and the Parises coming out. How do you feel about all that?
I don't know. I can't right? figure it out. I don't think it's a great sign that Nike's doing this to stay relevant. Right?
That's true.
Yeah.
Exactly, Nike, right? But as a guy who couldn't get a lot of those shoes right back when they came out.
Yeah.
And now if I'm a little bit older, have some extra discretionary income and I can get them, what's really the harm in that? You know what I mean? I've been a part of sneaker culture for so long and I love being a part of it, but it's this weird culture where it's like, we want a thing because nobody else can have it. And if they make that thing widely available, we don't want it anymore. Right. And the first time I was really conflicted about this, maybe 10 years ago when the Columbia 11s came out for Christmas, right? That was a big Jordan holiday release.
Your
right?
favorite.
Yeah.
And right after, I didn't get them. I just figured I was going to pass on them. I didn't want them for whatever reason. But then right after, I was in a packed mall, like on December 28th, we were returning gifts, spending Christmas money. And literally, like, I saw over 100 people wearing them. kids,
yeah,
parents, every whole family's wearing them. If you want to do sneakers with your family, dope. That's really cool to me. But all of a sudden, I was like, well, why would I want that? Everybody has it.
Yeah.
But then
yeah.
I'm like, well, it's the same shoe that I liked before everybody had it. And I go into this weird like rabbit hole in my mind of like, why does you not having it make it cool for me to have if we just both like the shoe? Yeah. And so it's kind of a weird question, right?
Yeah.
I this is kind of an outsider looking in because this guy has really gotten me into sneakers more so just within the last 5 years or so. But to me, it almost seems like the things that were cool, like you said, the Wu-Tang Dunks, the Paris, those were cool because when they came out, there wasn't a lot, but they were cool looking and it was something unique. Where now, to me, it looks like if you're going to be re-releasing these, the mass release is part of it. It makes it a little weird. But I just think, too, you're kind of like, it's in a way less cool knowing that Nike's like, oh, these are cool. Yeah. You should put these out because they are cool.
Yeah.
And one thing I'll say, too, real quick. So take the Wu-Tang Dunk for an example, right? Yeah. There were so few pairs of those that if you had one, you literally knew a person in Wu-Tang. Like, it was that limited of a release.
Yeah.
If you had them, you knew Method Man or the RZA or ODB or something, right?
Exactly.
But then, just a couple years later, the resale market was, you didn't know Wu-Tang. You had enough money to buy the sneaker from the guy that knew somebody in Wu-Tang, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it became like a rich kid thing where you weren't necessarily cool. You just had a lot of money to make yourself look cool, right?
Yeah.
And now we're super in that era now with the bots. That kids are, it's a weird thing where, like, there was an era in New York in the mid-2000s when the Grape Fives came out or the Pigeon Dunks came out. Like, if you got to the store and got back to your house or your car without getting robbed, you're, like, the toughest dude in the block.
Oh, right? Yeah.
But now it's become the nerds, and I don't mean in a bad way, but the computer kids took over where there's no, you don't even leave your house.
No,
you don't even
have
to worry about having cash in hand and walk back to your house. You just go on the bot, you know, your bot does the work for you because you had enough money and sense to pay for the bot, and now you got the new Supreme release or whatever. And I don't think that's a bad thing, but I do think the idea of just getting a shoe to resell it and just being the shoe being a symbol of wealth rather than a symbol of you respecting the culture and being cool, I think that's a downgrade for us. I think that's a bad thing.
I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah. And I mean, we come, like I said, we come from the same kind of generation. We were waiting in malls. We were outside in the cold. We were sleeping overnight in their chair or the tent. You know what I mean? Now you got the sneakers. Yeah. You got the sneakers app, and everything is all raffles now, right?
And it's weird because I lived through two eras of sneakers that were incredibly. The first was Jordans came out around Thanksgiving. You didn't know the release date. And they were on the shelf for months afterwards. I lived through that. Right? That was my high school. Then I lived through the internet tells you they're coming out on, let's say, November 6th. And there's a line around the block at midnight for November 6th.
Yep. Right? Yep.
And then I lived through the internet sneakers app era that we live in now. I don't know if one's actually better than – I guess the best is you just walked in the store, bought what you wanted, and walked out. That was fun. That was a good time, right? The late night sneaker line was definitely stressful. It was definitely more stressful than it is now. And now like the pay to play era, I'm kind of happy. I'm a little bit removed from it. I think one problem Nike has, and why we're having it relate to us in a second, I'm at a weird point in my life where every sneaker I've ever loved has been retro multiple times, right?
Yeah.
And I probably have one or two pairs already. And I have less places to go wearing the sneakers as I get older. So it's like, how many more pairs do I need? Right?
Right.
If I already got five pairs of Jordan 6s in my closet that I have no place to wear, and my social calendar is getting less and less as I get older, how many pairs do I have to keep buying?
Yeah.
And that's a real conversation we have to have of like, we're retroing shoes that were hot 30 years ago. So the people that remember them coming out are now in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. Does a 60-year-old guy need to have the newest Dunks? And where's he wearing them?
Yeah.
That's a serious question, right?
Right.
Gotta come with the heat to the PTA meeting. Someone's got to do it.
I gotta ask. So, Seton Hall is a Under Armour school. How are you getting? Do you have a guy, or how are you getting your sneakers now?
We have an equipment manager that deals directly with Under Armour.
Okay.
I have a budget. I have an equipment budget where I can pick some stuff for myself.
Nice.
And then eventually we get samples and stuff that everybody kind of gets, right?
Yeah.
I'm kind of lucky because I wear a small. Which is, you know, not everybody uses that. Not many people in my job that wear that size, so I'm getting probably more than a regular person does. But the thing I always say about Under Armour clothing, we'll start with the clothing. Have you guys ever been to Miami, the city of Miami?
I have not.
I've never been either, actually.
Okay. So Miami is a great city if you're young, rich, and in great shape. And Under Armour clothing is the exact same thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, we switched from Adidas to Under Armour 10 years ago, and I was like, some people got to jump on a treadmill because that Under Armour is unforgiving. You want to be in shape if you wear an Under Armour. But it is pretty expensive, right? And it's definitely the cuts and the sizing definitely better for younger people and older people.
Right.
But not bad. Like I work out every day. I'm in decent shape. I don't mind wearing it every day on the clothes. The shoes, they've yet to really have a shoe kind of cross over in a sneakerhead world, right? I feel like the Curry 1s and 2s got a little bit of traction, and then after that really didn't do much. And they've had a couple signature athletes, but really haven't, to my knowledge, done anything where, like, the young kids are super excited about the next Joel Embiid or the next Curry or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But from a performance perspective, the running shoes, the lift, the cross-training type shoes, they're solid sneakers. They're not terrible. The price point is a little high, but if you get them on sale or something like that, I think it's a pretty solid sneaker. And then I'd like to see him try to do more in our world, try to do some collabs or limited releases or something to kind of be a little bit cooler, I think, but they just haven't made that jump for whatever reason.
Right. Should we jump into some?
Yeah. So we do have a few, you know, kind of, not games, but sections of the show that we do. And
we would love for you to involve you in this and get your opinion
let's
on
go,
these.
Let's go.
We, our first usual segment that we like to do is Copper Drop.
Copper Drop. So we do two sneakers head to head, and I usually make this guy pick, and, you know, one to keep, one to let go. So
I personally chose the two that I chose kind of had, I felt like kind of a meaning towards the episode. So one shoe that kind of that he would definitely like,
yep.
And then something that just came out that kind of is something that means a lot to us. So it's going to be a little tough for all three, I think.
I like it. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, here we go. So up top there, we got the Kobe 5 X-Ray Protro. And then down on the bottom side, we got the Air Max 95 Erosion colorway. This Kobe just came out today. And the Erosion Air Max 95, I think, came out end of September.
The 30th.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So the Air Max 95 was designed, actually, by the original designer of the first Air Max 95. His name is Sergio Lozano. Angelo, you want
to? If I'm going first, I'm going to, for obvious reasons, cop the 95.
Okay.
Right? Okay. But let's say I wasn't in a situation with a book that drops on November 1st based on that design.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I think I still pick it because for me, it's a little more wearable shoe.
Definitely.
That Kobe with the X-ray, really cool. If I'm going to look at it in a museum, might pick it over the 95, might not. But if I'm going to wear them and get some use out of them, definitely 95.
Okay, cool. What you got?
That's definitely kind of how I was feeling, just because I think the X-ray style that they chose for this Kobe is a cool nod to that championship in particular, you know, because he was really banged up during the 2010 championship. And I think they put out a shirt with the X-ray of his hand that says, you know, he broke his shooting finger and his pinky and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a cool overall concept, but I do feel like maybe, you know, a good Halloween shoe, it'd be a little little weird to just be wearing them around like Valentine's Day or something.
Yeah.
Where I think probably Air Max 95, it's such a cool colorway, you know, it's got all these earth tones and I think they integrate really well together. So I think I'd probably go with the Air Max as well.
Yeah. I mean, as big as a Kobe fan as I am, I think it's a clean sweep. I'm gonna have to go with a 95 as well, just because I have not owned a 95 in a while. I need one in my collection. Cool color. Obviously, the history of the Kobe 5 is what we like to, but the 95 is a little more versatile. It's just like what we've kind of been talked about a little bit here. You can wear it in more different situations. But yeah, I'm going to have to go with the 95 as well, guys. Good selection.
All right. Clean sweep. I did not see that.
I didn't see that coming.
I thought for sure you were going to go with the Kobe. But yeah, this, I think, two very cool pairs, I would say.
Still two pairs that, I mean, I would love to have them both at some point.
But cool, thank you for copping and dropping with us.
Thank you, sir.
Angelo, we appreciate that. And then we have one more section that we do, which is some heat on feet. And we've been talking about baseball playoffs, you know, for the last few days that we've been talking. So we got some cleats, some cleats on feet. Mm-hmm. First up here, we've got our guy, Mookie Betts. He broke out the Jordan 3 True Blue against the Mets in Game 1.
classic shoe.
Always cool to see the old classic Jordans on a cleat, I think. Especially, we had this conversation recently where we love to see the cleats having more of an influence in the game.
Into the uniform, too. Yes. We talked about that.
That's such an easy mix, right? That Dodger uniform, Dodger blue, and the Nike True Blue.
Right.
It's almost too easy, but it looks great. You can't deny it, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it's like there's nothing too... I mean, obviously the Jordan 3 is a great shoe and this is a cool colorway, but it's like there is nothing too... It's not even necessarily a PE, you know, because it's just...
It's the colorway. Blue.
Yeah.
A lot of the MLB players have gotten to know more of the customizers too as well. So like the shoe surgeon, lots of really good customizers out there who do these for them. But like you said, this one you don't have to do too much. Probably just threw the cleats on there.
And yeah, just threw the cleats. There you go.
One of the big ambassadors of the cool cleat in baseball too. So
yeah, one of the bigger ones for sure.
Yeah,
this was game two actually, not game one. The Dodgers did end up losing 3-7. Mookie had 4 at bats, got on base on a walk, and then had 3 strikeouts for the other one. So not a great. It was for the Dodgers, not a great game.
Yeah, and he's kind of woken up a little bit.
Yeah, after last night, it seems like he's. He's woken up, that's for sure.
What position did you play in when you played baseball?
Shortstop and second base. Wow. Kind of like a smaller, quicker guy kind of thing.
Right, okay. In the mix of it right there.
Awesome.
That's a good position. Next up, we got another one that a little more work in, but ties in with the uniform. So I got Fernando Tatis Jr. here. This was in Dodger Stadium on Game 5. He's got the Jordan 1, a little hard to see there, but there we go. Jordan 1 PE in the Padres colorway, so
brown and yellow.
How do you feel about the Padres brown uniforms? My wife did not like them.
I know a lot of people hate them. Also, I thought the shoe was cool just because you don't see a brown and yellow Jordan 1.
Never. No.
Ever, really. There are some particular ones that have that kind of colorway going, but I picked it just because it's an awesome player. Matches with the uniforms, but yeah, a lot of people, especially people in LA who don't like the Padres, don't like those uniforms either.
They have those kind of pinstripe jerseys that I think are a lot better. They were wearing them at home, but these brown on top, I don't know.
Real quick, I like the Padres uniforms probably more than you guys do, but here they're unique. There's
That's
nobody
true.
In sports
yep.
with a brown and yellow uniform, right?
Right.
There's like 100 blue and white teams, 100 red and white yep. teams. Oh, but their uniform, love it or hate it, and I think the fact that people hate it means they kind of did it right, right? Because you have a visceral reaction to that.
True.
Where, like, you can look at most baseball uniforms and be like, whatever. That Padres one, you love it or hate it, and I kind of love it.
Yeah, and I think some of that hate comes from just hating that team as well. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Sure.
Like, you got to be able to, for me, you got to be able to separate that, right? And I don't hate them. I actually like the fact that it's a little bit of a throwback too. So
we were talking about this when we were watching this game together. That like kind of how you said, Angelo, like brown especially is very underutilized in professional
yes.
sports.
Yes.
Even where like the Cleveland Browns in the name
orange,
I associate orange with them.
Yeah, they have like a little bit of brown, mostly orange and white. Whereas like the Padres, they're going in, man. They went
oh, yeah.
at it, and I kind of respect that.
Oh yeah,
And
a fan of I like the combo of the brown and yellow too.
Yeah, very unique combo. Tatis this game, the Dodgers ended up winning 2-0. He had 4 at bats and had 1 strikeout, so a little quiet for him as mm-hmm. well. And then last up, I think I would say maybe not the sneaker king, but the cleat king
mm-hmm.
of the MLB. We've got Jazz Chisholm Jr. And as we mentioned, we talked about these briefly, I think, earlier. He's wearing the Travis Scott Jordan 1.
Yep.
This is the reverse mocha of the Jordan 1. And him and Aaron Judge were wearing the same cleats, which I thought was kind of interesting. This was game 2, so just a few days ago in New York. 4 at bats, he got a hit for a double, strikeout, and then was caught stealing once en route to the Yankees 6-3 victory. So he's had some crazy cleats all year. He had some custom shoes. He's been really yeah. wearing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a fitting custom cleat for him too, because Jazz Chisholm lives his whole life like it's one big Travis Scott concert.
That's
he's
also true.
Always having a ball.
He's oh yeah, he's great.
Fun. And I think a lot of times you thought that might not fit in with the Yankees, but I think he's bringing a light mood to the clubhouse, keeping everybody kind of happy and having a good time, and they're winning. But I think that's a guy that plays professional sports in a way of like, I'm having the time of my life. I want the fans to have the time of their life.
Oh, yeah.
I like his vibe, and I think that's another way that Cleef matched with the pinstripes really well.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the Yankees are known for having a more strict rules in their clubhouse. You know, you can't have facial hair, yeah, or you can't have a beard. You got to have a mustache if you do. You know, really, really serious from the Steinbrenners, right? So I think he adds a huge element to that team, like a light element, like you said, some flavor, and yeah, maybe he's, you know, giving them some drip tips too. You know what I mean?
Maybe. I mean, we pulled up. We had a, I'll put a photo up when I get this podcast. But there was a shot at the end of the game of kind of all the infielders, and it was like Sneaker City. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. They had all these crazy customs and. So it was cool.
And one of the pictures that we sent out, Aaron Judge has the same pair too. So I wonder if there's like a little bit of an influence from their friendship there, from the same.
Maybe
shoes.
Yeah. You never know. But that's all I got. That's all it for. All I had for Cleat on Feet.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us on that too, Angelo.
No, that was fun, guys. Thank you.
And one last game that I usually play with this guy is I give three stat lines.
Oh, okay.
And you guys got to guess the player who the stat line is. It's usually like a crazy stat line. So I'm going to start with the first one. 2016 baseball. This is a baseball player. He had 7 plate appearances and went 0 for 0. 6 walks, 3 intentional, also got hit by pitch against the Cubs, and he plays for the Nationals. He's a wonderful player.
What year was this?
2016. He's
Can I ask one more question? Is sure. He currently on the Nationals, or on the Nationals in 2016?
He's on the Nationals 2016, and he's currently on. Do you want another team?
Go ahead.
He's on the Phillies.
Okay, that's who. That's who I thought. Who I thought?
It was Bryce Harper, right?
There you go.
There it is, nice. Bryce Harper. Yeah. Yeah.
I wish I would have said that before I asked you what team he's on now, because it ain't got too easy. But yeah.
And this next guy is...
Jeez, so what was that, though? It was 7 at-bats, or 9 at-bats? And
7 plate appearances, 6 walks, and 3 of them were intentional, and he got hit by a pitch, one of them.
What a...
This next guy, this is more of a career record that he broke. Over 700 at-bats, which is kind of ridiculous in baseball in a season. He had over 700 at-bats, averaged .373, and had 262 hits. Not even close, the next person in one season.
In one guess.
Let's see. No, I'm thinking. I'll hear your guess. Let's hear this.
Tony Gwynn.
What'd you got?
I was gonna go with the all time slugger Barry Bonds.
It is Mr. Ichiro Suzuki.
Oh, ooh. Suzuki.
Okay. When he's on the Mariners. Yeah, ridiculous baseball player.
Such a smart player.
And the last one here might be a little bit easy, but I just thought it was also a ridiculous stat. Really famous baseball player who played, known famously for playing with the A's, played in 1982. He had 130 steals. I'm pretty sure that's pretty easy.
I think I know this one.
Who you got, Angelo?
Ricky Henderson.
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be Ricky Henderson.
Ricky Henderson was playing independent baseball for a team in New Jersey called the Newark Bears. Like 6 years ago, like he played. He played so long. I'm not even kidding. That he didn't. He hung it up in Major League Baseball when he was like in his 40s, maybe.
Yeah.
And played for another legit 10, 15 years at on indie ball teams around New Jersey.
Amazing.
It's crazy the longevity that you can get out of baseball. Like, didn't Randy Johnson play in the MLB until he was like 46 or something like
yes.
that? Something crazy. I saw that clip of Bartolo Colon when he got his first homer at age 42.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, I mean, and people said like he would trash talk you too, like, oh, I'm going to steal that base right now, and he would just do it.
He would just
you
know do what it.
I mean? And he's kind of a funny character kind of guy. So good job, guys. You did pretty good on
Thank
that.
You, sir.
Yeah.
Appreciate the trivia.
So we are towards the end of our episode.
Yeah, that's all I got. Thank you, Angelo, for your time. Again, guys, new book coming out, The Next 4 Years, Compete, Win, and Thrive in College Sports, November 1st. So
he also
be
has,
sure to check that out.
He also has the book Finish Strong, Resistance Training for Endurance Athletes. That's also out now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, everywhere you can think of. And
hey, guys, this was really a lot of fun, man. I love talking sports. Love to Target Sneakers. Got a bowl of you guys. If you guys want to follow me online, it's at Mr. Fifth Round, MR, the number 5, THRUND. That's kind of the sneaker side of things. And if you want any strength training advice, stuff like that, look me up on the Seton Hall website, shoot me an email, and I'll become friends. But I really appreciate your time, guys. I had a great time on Sneaks and Stash today.
Awesome.
We appreciate you, man. Thank you for your time. It was a pleasure to have you on here for the hour. And don't be a stranger, man. We'd love to have you on again at some point in the future. Best of luck to everything in the future with Seton Hall and all your endeavors. And we'll see you next time.
See you.
Thanks, Angelo. All right, guys. That was our first ever guest on the show. We're super excited to have had Angelo Gingerelli join us from Seton Hall. So. Shout out to him. Make sure you guys follow him. We have all his socials and everything in the description. So thank you again to him.
Go ahead, check out his books online, Finish Strong, Resistance Training for Endurance Athletes, which is already out, and The Next 4 Years, which is on the way to being out.
November 1st.
And go check those out on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all your Kindle, all the places where you can find your books and audiobooks. And huge shout out to Angelo Gingerelli and Seton Hall University and their athletes over there and students. And we'll catch you on the next episode on the Flippity Floppity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.